It's not just that he wants to do it. He needs to do it. There's no way in heaven or hell that I can stop him. He's going to go through with this, even if it kills him. I've got a rival, she realized. Until he gets past this mission, I'm not the most important thing in his life. What will he be like once he's finished this stunt? Will he come back to me? What if the stunt kills him? What will I do then?
You heard the man, Timoshenko said sourly. We're supposed to have this problem solved before election day. Habib looked up from his computer display. Eberle? He said that? At the last debate, he promised. Habib muttered, a politician's promise. Timoshenko had come to the computer center to witness the crucial test of Habib's prediction scheme. If the man's work was right, there should be a surge from Saturn's magnetic field sometime this morning. For his part, Timoshenko had increased the shielding on the superconducting wires that span the habitat's outer shell, and put in place a set of electronic backups that automatically shunted power when a surge caused dangerous voltage hikes in the habitat's electrical circuitry. Well, said Habib softly, there's nothing to do now except wait. Timoshenko did not enjoy waiting. He paced impatiently among the dozen men and women at their workstations, all of them bent over the work on their own screens, and trying to ignore the Russian's impatient footsteps clicking along the tiled floor. Hands clasped behind his back, face squinched into a dark scowl, Timoshenko paced and fidgeted, glanced at the wall clock, paced and fidgeted some more. Try to relax, Habib said, looking up as Timoshenko reached his workstation. You can't force it to happen. I know, I know. The minutes dragged by. Timoshenko thought of Eberle as he marched to and fro across the computer center. Eberle. The man had never spoken with Katrina. Never. Eberle's whole story about Katrina joining him here had been nothing but a lie. A damned lie. A trick to get him to accept the job as chief of maintenance. Katrina would never come out here. Never. Why should she? Why would anyone leave Earth to come to join me in exile? She doesn't want to be with me. I'll kill him, Timoshenko told himself. Sooner or later, I'll kill Eberle and myself and everyone in this tin can of a Siberia. I'll put an end to this misery once and for all. Try to relax, Habib repeated. You try, Timoshenko answered silently. But he stopped pacing and pulled up a little wheeled chair to sit next to Habib. Half a minute later, he sprang to his feet and began pacing again. Shouldn't you be in touch with your staff people? Habib suggested mildly. No, the Russian snapped. Either the shielding works or it doesn't. Either the automatic relays do their job properly or they don't. My people have done their jobs. Now we wait for the real test. You're going to give yourself a heart attack, Habib warned. My heart wouldn't dare attack me. But if you don't... The curve on Habib's screen that displayed the intensity of Saturn's magnetosphere began to kink visibly. Wait, I think it's coming. Timoshenko raced back to the chair and plopped on it. Yes, said Habib, pointing with a trembling finger. It's spiking rapidly. Timoshenko stared at the ragged curve. It rose, writhing like a thing alive, jagged peaks and small dips between them, climbing, climbing. It's a big one, Habib murmured. The intensity continued to climb for several minutes while the two men stared at the screen, hardly breathing. Then it began to go down again. Habib blinked, then looked around. All the others were still bent over the screens as if nothing had happened. Nothing happened, Timoshenko said. Breaking into a huge grin, Habib said, Yes, exactly. We've just experienced a monster spike and nothing happened. No power outages. The lights didn't even blink. Timoshenko yanked his palm comp out of his pocket. I'll check with my staff. I need a full report. Every circuit. As he pecked out the numbers on his handheld, he realized that if there had been an outage anywhere, his phone would be ringing. It worked, he told himself. We've learned how to prevent the outages. And he knew that the same knowledge could be used to totally shut down all the electrical systems in the habitat when he wanted to end it all.
Holly was surprised that Douglas Stavanger himself answered her call to Cellini. She had heard earlier from George Ambrose, the chief administrator of the asteroidal miners' headquarters at Ceres, who had confirmed that he'd communicated with Eberle. "We'll buy water ice from you, bloke, soon's as you can ship it to us," Ambrose had said in response to Holly's call. Since there was nearly an hour's lag time in communications between Saturn and the asteroid belt, even at the speed of light, conversations were impossible. Holly called in the morning. Ambrose replied several hours later. "You asked about the price your chief administrator quoted," Ambrose had said, his shaggy red-maned face filling Holly's phone screen. "He was kind of vague about it, but I got the impression it'd be less than half what it costs us now for squeezing water out of the carbonaceous rocks here in the belt." Ambrose had rattled on for more than a quarter hour, then bid Holly farewell with a cheery, "You got any more questions? Just zip 'em to me. I'll be happy to deal with you blokes." Douglas Stavanger was completely different. Holly had sent her message to the chairman of Cellini's governing council. All day she had waited for a reply. She was getting ready for sleep when his return call came in. Now she sat cross-legged on her bed while Stavanger spoke. He looked much younger than Holly had expected, and his face seemed to be about the same skin tone as her own. "He's been the power behind the throne at Cellini for ages," Holly thought. "How can he look so young and handsome?" "I'm answering your query because the council doesn't want to make a formal declaration as yet. Your Mr. Eberle made it clear that his inquiry was, well, not secret exactly, but sensitive." Just like Malcolm, Holly said to herself, "he does everything in whispers." "Cellini manufactures its own water from oxygen in the lunar regolith," Stavanger explained, "and hydrogen blowing in on the solar wind. We also extract water from the frozen caches at the poles, and they sell water to the other settlements on the moon," Holly thought. "However, if Habitat Goddard could supply us water at a price lower than our existing costs, we'd be foolish not to consider the offer very seriously." That meant they would take it, depending on the price, Holly figured. "On the other hand," Stavanger said, "there's a good deal of excitement in the scientific community Earthside about one of your people finding living creatures in the rings. The university consortium is already holding discussion with the IAA about banning all commercial activities in Saturn's rings. If that happens, it would make mining the rings politically and legally impossible." "Unless Malcolm's willing to risk going to war with the IAA," Holly replied silently. "The thing is," Stavanger went on, "water is the key to expansion here on the moon, and elsewhere in the solar system as well, I should think." Holly almost asked him what he meant, but she knew he wouldn't hear her question for more than an hour. Instead, she continued to listen as Stavanger spelled out, "You see, we can get along all right on the water available to us now. We recycle pretty thoroughly. There are some losses, of course. No system is 100% perfect. But if we had a reliable, continuous supply of additional water, we could expand and build new settlements here on the moon. Lord knows there are plenty of people anxious to get away from Earth and live here, but we've always had to limit our growth to our water supply. Increase the water supply, and Cellini can grow. We could even spin off daughter cities. We could raise the moon's population from a few thousand to millions." Holly sank back on her pillows. "This is cosmic," she said to herself. "We hold the key to the growth of human settlements all across the system." "But the IAA is most likely going to ban commercial activities in the rings, at least until the scientists can thoroughly study the ring creatures, and that might take years." Almost as an afterthought, Stavanger added, "Maybe you should think of other sources of water. After all, you're a lot closer to the TNOs than anyone else in the solar system." "TNOs?" Holly blurted aloud. "I hope that answers your questions, Ms. Lane. Please feel free to call me personally if you'd like to discuss this further." The phone screen went blank, leaving Holly thinking. Trans-Neptunian object?